Monday morning you showed the fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We have another full episode here for you in the month of June. Not a whole lot going on once again. We're kind of in the dead period of the NFL calendar year. But we have some hot button issues to discuss nonetheless. We're going to lead off with the Washington Redskins and their possible name change. There's been pressure from various outlets, Native American groups, even senators in the last year, the last several years from the Native American groups. So this has been a hot button issue for a while. Actually, it's been a topic that we've discussed previously on Monday Morning Huddle, and I've written an article about it. I believe that was over a year ago now. So, but it's worth bringing back up because it was in the news again. Some groundbreaking stuff on that topic, actually. So that's our first story. In our second segment, sadly, the former head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Chuck Knoll, passed away over a week ago now. It occurred since our last show, though, so even though it's over a week old, I do want to talk a little bit about Chuck Knoll and his meaning and importance to the history of the NFL. And there were a couple of articles, if I do say so myself, some great articles up about Chuck Knoll on the website Football Nation, one written by yours truly and another one by my co-host over at MTR Media, Tom Pollan. Great articles there, especially by Tom, and I will bring those up in the second segment. Then in our fourth and long segment, we have three statements to go to today. We're going to talk Jimmy Graham and his latest contract negotiations with his franchise tag. Is he a tight end? Is he a wide receiver? We'll discuss that. The latest installment of Cooper Allen's top 100 players is out on Football Nation. Actually, that came out over a week ago, so we'll get into that. He has players 60 through 41 released. Players 40 through 21 will be out this week, so we'll dive into the wide receivers of the group 60 through 41. And then finally, some retired Hall of Famers on NFL Network, Rod Woodson and Warren Sapp, had some comments about Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger and whether or not he's a Hall of Fame quarterback as of right now. And while we talk Roethlisberger and his possibility of being in the Hall of Fame, we'll also talk Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers. Those three guys kind of joined at the hip as they were all taken very early on in that 2004 draft. Wow, now 10 years ago, believe it or not. So, actually, a heavy Steelers episode. We'll have a Steelers wide receiver to discuss in Cooper Allen's list. Also, Ben Roethlisberger and Chuck Knoll. So, if you're a Steeler fan, definitely stick around. But we'll be talking a lot of different NFL teams today. Before we start, I forgot to wish my aunt a happy birthday on Friday on my live show, I-80 Sports Talk. If you follow my work, I have a live sports show with Tom Pollan at MTR Media, and it was my aunt's birthday on Friday. And sometimes when you're on air and it's live, you just kind of forget to mention something that you wanted to. So I forgot to mention a very happy birthday to my aunt 2 days, well, now 3 days later. It was on Friday. So I hope you had a great weekend, and I look forward to seeing you in July coming to visit. And one other thing about my personal life, the Star Ledger, actually not really my personal life, my work life, my job at the Star Ledger for the summer ended on Sunday with my last stories being released on end of the year stuff for softball, which is what I covered in the spring. And I don't think anybody from the Star Ledger actually listens to this show. I do have some coworkers that occasionally turn on my stuff, turn on radio shows and podcasts that I've done. So on the off chance that someone from the Star Ledger, NJ.com, is listening to the beginning of this podcast, I just want to send a great thank you to all of you guys. You had a, it, my first season with you guys was really special, and you guys made it that way. It was really a fun group to work with, really a great group of guys, fellow reporters that helped me out, fellow editors that helped me get better each and every day, and it was a great first-year experience at my first real job out of college. So fantastic, and maybe I'll be back in the fall. Don't really know what's going on with the newspaper there. Hope that I will stay in touch with all those guys, though, no matter what happens. And you guys have definitely helped improve my chances of landing somewhere else, because I am certainly a better journalist now than I was 8-9 months ago before I started. So let's get to football now. Washington Redskins name change. The possibility of a name change is our leading story today. Now, there hasn't been anything brand new since the news broke on Wednesday about the Washington Redskins losing their trademark protection. So let's just go over that a little bit and what that means. It is a little bit complicated, but a case was taken to the patent office in the U.S. government, and that office ruled, I'm going to read the exact quote from Fox Sports, based on the evidence properly before us, these trademark registrations must be canceled because they are, or they were, disparaging to Native Americans at the respective times they were registered, initially registered back in 1967. So the moral of the story, what this basically means, the Redskins are no longer, or could possibly no longer have exclusive rights to sell products with the Redskin name. Now, it's the actual Redskin name that the franchise is losing its trademark to because it's disparaging to Native Americans. When this was initially reported on Wednesday, this was a huge victory for Native Americans, the senators that were pushing for a name change. Anybody that wanted a name change, this was a huge victory for them. Now, I am going to interject my opinion on this, and I believe if you are a follower of my work, you probably already know what my opinion or what my stance is on this subject. And Tom and I got into this last Wednesday on our show on MTR Media. I am under the belief that if you are not Native American, you do not have the right to say whether or not the phrase Redskins is disparaging or not. Is it offensive or not? I find it offensive. But I don't believe I have the right to make a decision on whether it's offensive or not, because I am not Native American. I am for name change. And I've heard arguments that Redskin is no different than Yankees. It's no different from Braves or Chiefs or Indians. It is different. I'm sorry. Wake up. You're being ignorant if you think it's the same as Yankees. White people were the dominant, were the superior people in this country. Whites, Europeans, took over this continent, this country, established it, and were never slaves, were never succumbed to racism. Do whites experience racism? Sure they do, of course. But they don't go through the everyday hardships that minorities go through, because they're not a minority. They are the majority. They've always been the majority. Yankees is not the same as Redskins. Redskins is not a compliment. It is a slur. The name should be changed. Anyway, enough politics. I seem to get into some really touchy, controversial issues on the show, but I think that's actually a good thing. Hopefully it doesn't rub anybody the wrong way. Now, I've actually found a really interesting, intelligent, informative, I'll say, article on Fox Sports about this, about the Redskin name, and it's actually the most recent article that I could find on it, because on Wednesday they announced that the Redskins had the right to appeal this initial repeal of the patent or the trademark, that the Redskins could repeal the losing the trademark. So that, but nothing new has come out about that since Wednesday. They were supposed to file an appeal Thursday or Friday, but I can't find anything really on whether that happened or whether that's that process has begun. But anyway, the newest article I've found on Fox Sports goes through the whole thing, and I recommend you just Googling Washington Redskins trademark or Washington Redskins name, or even just going to Fox Sports and finding it. It's a couple days old now, but it is a really good article. And initially, like I said, on Wednesday, it was a huge victory, and people that are in the same position as I am that believe that the name should be changed were actually happy. It was a huge victory because with the Redskins losing the exclusive right to sell merchandise with the Redskin name, not only was this move cutting into the Redskins' wallets, losing money from being able to sell merchandise, it's cutting into all 31, not 32, because the Cowboys and Jerry Jones aren't a part of this deal, but 31 of the 32 owners share the merchandise sales that the NFL makes, the merchandise revenue. So it's cutting into the Giants. It's cutting into Al Davis, if he was still alive, the Davis family in Oakland, the 49ers, Seattle, Green Bay. All those teams are losing money because a piece of the merchandise revenue that the NFL makes, that the Redskins make specifically, could be lost because any company can sell Redskins merchandise. Now, the Fox Sports article that I found actually put the kibosh on that a little bit. There are certain laws that will protect the Redskins in a certain way, and actually they kept their copyright on the Redskins logo. So even though the Redskins name lost its trademark, the logo itself is a copyright that the Redskins cannot lose. So if you want to sell a jersey or even a t-shirt or sweatshirt with the Redskins logo, you can't have that exact logo. Now, I'm not a lawyer, a trademark expert or anything like that, so I don't know how much of the logo you'd have to change in order to sell a Washington Redskins t-shirt or jersey. Maybe you can take one feather away from the logo and it's okay. Maybe you can add a feather to the Redskin, the actual face, the feather that's in the back. Maybe you can add a third one and that's not a part of the copyright. I don't know how that works exactly. Maybe anything that resembles the Redskins logo will not be allowed to use. Permitted to be used. I don't know. That is one issue that has to be looked into. And actually, there's quite a bit that hasn't been looked into yet, whether or not a company like Adidas could start making Redskin jerseys. They're the old NFL jersey sponsor. Of course, it's now Nike, which I'm sure Nike is not happy about this recent trademark loss of the Redskin name. But the last point that the Fox Sports article makes is it actually might not be that detrimental to the Redskins. They might not lose that much money or enough money to make it worth changing the name. I find that surprising. I really believed that the owners might start pushing Dan Snyder to change the name if that's going to cut into every owner's wallet. But according to this Fox Sports article I found, the NFL, each team makes a lot more money with broadcasting and ticket sales. Broadcast money and broadcast revenue and ticket sales, the tickets that they sell, which makes sense. You would think that merchandise would be way behind those two things in third place, and maybe there's a couple of things ahead of that. I don't even know. But I still would think it might be enough to change the name. Of course, with this new, with the Redskins losing the trademark, it's certainly a victory for the party that wants to change the name, and maybe that party will gain some steam and more support to force Dan Snyder to change the name. But in terms of whether or not it's a financial difficulty, is it a financial issue for why Snyder might change the name, Fox Sports really put a kibosh on that idea. So we will continue to follow this, though, as you know, the offseason continues and we continue into training camp in the next month or so. Believe it or not, training camp is coming up pretty soon. But again, where I stand on this, it's a victory for changing the name. Of course, it's still a long process, and the Redskins, again, can't appeal. And this this ruling has been appealed before. Back in 1999, the same ruling occurred where the Redskins were very close to losing the name trademark. And because of some technicalities, it was appealed, and the Redskins were able to keep that trademark until last week. So we'll see if maybe it's appealed again, and it's not even an issue whether Snyder loses enough money to change the name or not. But either way, we will continue to monitor the situation. All right, we're going to go into our first break now, and then we'll come back and we'll recap the life and career of former Pittsburgh head coach Chuck Knoll. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, I want to hear what you think about the show. We don't have enough interaction with our listeners on here. I want to talk to you guys. Give me a tweet. DM, HOLCOMB is my handle. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. And you can also find me on Facebook. Send me a message on there, Dave's Football News. Now we're getting into discussing Chuck Knoll and his career with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was now, I guess, 10 days ago that, as of this recording, that Knoll passed away at the age of 82, late on a Friday night, in his suburban home in Pittsburgh. And, you know, there were two articles written about him on Football Nation, one by myself and another by Tom Pollan, and they actually really did a great job, even though Tom and I did not plan this. They really did a great job of complimenting each other. We said a lot of the same things, had similar themes, but really used different examples, and they're both worth going and checking out and reading, even though it's a little bit of an old story. And actually, they've already had Chuck Knoll's funeral, which occurred maybe 4 or 5 days ago now. But a little background on Chuck Knoll, if you don't know him. He coached under Paul Brown, Sid Gillum from the San Diego Chargers. He's probably a little bit less, not as well known as Paul Brown, which I hope most of our fans know, coached the Cleveland Browns. That's why they're called the Browns. And Don Shula, he also coached under him with the Baltimore Colts and was actually on the staff of the Colts that lost Super Bowl III to the New York Jets. Chuck Knoll was on that staff. So actually the next year he went and took his head coaching position in Pittsburgh. Nearly took a head coaching position in New England actually, but that did not turn out for Knoll. The Patriots hired someone else, and actually the Steelers' first pick, Art Rooney's first pick, was Penn State's coach, Joe Paterno, believe it or not. And he decided to stay at Penn State, and maybe it was a match made in heaven. Knoll and the Steelers, Knoll built the franchise, who had not won a playoff game prior to 1969, into a perennial Super Bowl contender, won four Super Bowls with him as head coach. He's the only head coach to win four Super Bowls, 1974, 75, 78, 79. The Steelers are still the only franchise in the NFL to win back-to-back Super Bowls. Other teams have won back-to-back championships, but in the Super Bowl era, the Steelers are the only team to win back-to-back twice. Knoll finished with a 209-156-1 record. That's in the top 10 among wins. Actually, I think he's pretty even higher up there. Might be the top 5. He had 12 postseason appearances. And like I said, the four Super Bowl championships. Those are the facts. Now, what I would like people to walk away with, what information to walk away with after this show, I believe Knoll is one of the most underappreciated figures in NFL history. That was the basis of my argument in my Chuck Knoll article. Now, I get that through his death now over the last 10 days and as we continue to celebrate his career and the Steelers have already announced that they're going to have a patch on their jerseys this season honoring Chuck Knoll. So nearly every Steeler broadcast this upcoming season is probably going to be mentioning, there will be a mention of Chuck Knoll. So yes, he's going to get a lot of attention, and in that way, he might not be underappreciated anymore. But up until 10 days ago, you just don't hear about the guy. You know, you hear Don Shula, you hear Tom Landry, Vince Lombardi, Bill Walsh. Those are the guys that you hear as the great coaches in NFL history. You know, Shula had the perfect season. Walsh created the West Coast offense. Vince Lombardi has the trophy named after him. And Tom Landry, you know, went to 5 Super Bowls, has the hat. He's a memorable figure in Dallas Cowboy history. Knoll coached so many great players, and he let his players take the focus. You know, they had Mean Joe and the Coke commercial, which is famous. Jack Lambert, a really mean, very mean middle linebacker. You had Terry Bradshaw, the likable but dumb blonde quarterback. Franco Harris and the Immaculate Reception, which I just watched a Football Life's documentary on the Immaculate Reception. Great stuff. I recommend you checking that out. That's from NFL Network. Just the list goes on and on of the players. Lynn Swann, John Stallworth. From that era, the Steelers have 9 Hall of Famers. Arguably could have more. So that team certainly had a lot of players that, I don't want to say that they were flashy, but they were big names. They were big stars that even today's NFL fans, young NFL fans like myself, if you're a big NFL fan, you're going to know a majority of those names. Chuck Knoll was a name not as many fans know about. And I would argue they should. He should be named with Tom Landry, Don Shula and Bill Walsh, Vince Lombardi. Not counting maybe some of the older coaches, Curly Lambeau and Papa Bear, the Bears, George Halas, the Bears really old coach. I'm talking, if you're just talking Super Bowl era, I mean, Knoll is by far in the top 5 coaches of all time. Even if you throw in the prior era before the Super Bowl, Knoll is probably a top 5 coach. I will even go as far as to say is a top 5 coach, maybe a top 3 coach. This is how good this guy was. And why he differentiated himself from everyone else, I listed all his stats. Yes, he had great talent. And I could go on and on about Knoll's genius of putting that team together. Because like I said, 1969, the Steelers drafted future Hall of Famer Joe Green. And even with him in Knoll's first season, the Steelers went 1-13. That's how bad they were. That's where Knoll was. That's where he started and had to build this team literally from the ground up. And he was able to do that, and it was pure genius, the players that he was able to find at small schools and put them into an NFL system. Even though some people said they were undersized at certain positions, he found guys that were mechanically sound and taught them the game of football. He was a great teacher. But what I admire so much about Chuck Knoll was his ability to continue to motivate his players, even after they had so much success. And I am a huge fan. I'm sure I brought it up on the show before, of NFL Network's documentary, America's Game. And Chuck Knoll is not a narrator in any of the four episodes about the Steelers' championships in the 70s. Again, he lets his players take the main focus. He did not volunteer to be a narrator, or maybe he wasn't even asked. I don't know. But he was not on the show. But regardless of that, he's mentioned in every single episode, all four of them, from the 1970s, and talking about phrases that he had or ways that he motivated people, and just stories about what he would do in the locker room. And he was really a unique motivator. He believed in many ways that you shouldn't have to be motivated. If you had to be motivated, there was something wrong, that you didn't deserve to be there playing professional football. But he would also, in many ways, remind people to continue to get better and continue to work towards the goal. And the goal every year for that team was to win the Super Bowl. And look, I don't want to take away from the talent that the Steelers teams had in the 70s, but we've had other talented teams in the NFL. We've had the 49er teams of the 80s, the 90s teams, the Cowboys. We've had the Patriots. I mean, those are and then if you throw in the 60s Packers, those are the five dynasties of the history of the NFL in the Super Bowl era. We've had other great teams, though, like the Washington Redskins in the 80s, the Miami Dolphins in the 70s, Denver Broncos in the 90s, late 90s. And look, every case is a little bit different. I mean, John Elway retired, so that was partially why the Broncos fell off. But in so many of those teams' cases, Redskins or Dolphins, you know, that those teams didn't stay on top all that long. Yes, the Redskins won three championships in 10 years, but they never repeated. Miami, yes, they did repeat 1-2 in a row, but never they didn't go back until 1982, and they never won a Super Bowl, still haven't won a Super Bowl as a franchise again since 1973. Knoll wouldn't let that happen. Knoll, even after winning two Super Bowls, continued to want to get better and continued to push his players and his team to look towards tomorrow. And I have a phrase that I want to end this segment on. It's from Mike Wagner. He said it in the 1975 America's Game episode. And you can pretty much sum up Chuck Knoll, I think, in just this one phrase. And Knoll said, or Knoll had a saying, real simple, be a tomorrow person. And what that means, from Mike Wagner explaining it in the episode, he said, tomorrow people means that if you are satisfied with what you are doing now or what you did yesterday, then you are going to fail. Knoll was never satisfied with what he did yesterday. He always tried to do it again or do it even better the next day or with the next opportunity. And he got all of his players to do the same. And that's why the Steelers were able to be such a competitive team in the 1970s for as long as they were. And honestly, I don't think we will see, we might see another team like the Steelers, although with the salary cap era, it is very tough to say that we'll see a team stay with all of those same players or same core of players to stay on top of the league for that long. I mean, New England has been on top for a very long time, but with a lot of different players. Same coach, same quarterback, but the Steelers did with mostly the same core of guys. other than, I mean, maybe you could say New England is the closest thing to Noel and the Steelers. After New England, though, I don't see the NFL having another team like that, maybe ever, with the way the salary cap is. And certainly, you might not see another coach like Chuck Noll ever again be able to motivate his players. And again, motivate is such an ironic word to use, because Chuck Noll didn't believe he had to motivate his players. But his little sayings, be a tomorrow person. Do whatever it takes and be a tomorrow person. Be better tomorrow than you were today. And if you don't do that, you are going to fail. That little stuff goes a long way with a core of players, even if they have all the talent in the world. That just made them that much better. We're due for another break. Here's another song from Phil Collins, and we'll be back with our Fourth and Long segment after this. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Once again, we want to hear from you fans, you listeners. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. Now, we're going into our fourth and long segment. I'm going to say a statement, either agree with it and go for fourth and long, or disagree and punt it away. Here we go. Now, this coming week, it's expected that the arbitrator in the Jimmy Graham case will make his decision of whether or not Graham should get paid wide receiver money or tight end money. Jimmy Graham claims he is more of a wide receiver than tight end, although it doesn't say that on his Twitter account, which was brought up during the case, which is pretty funny. If you consider yourself a wide receiver, or you want to be considered a wide receiver and get paid like a wide receiver, then change your bleeping Twitter account so that it says wide receiver and not tight end. They're actually using that against him. In his Twitter, it says, your Twitter bio, it said, for Jimmy Graham, New Orleans tight end. So I guess you're not going to get paid like a wide receiver. Well, anyway, why is this a big deal? Well, it is a big deal because it's a $5 million difference. The Saints put the franchise tag on Jimmy Graham, which means Graham is supposed to get paid the average of the top five tight ends if he's considered a tight end. So basically, if you put a franchise tag on a player, that player receives an average of what the top five players, salary-wise, receive at that given position. So at tight end, that would be $7 million. At wide receiver, that's $12 million. And it's a one-year contract. So for this next year, Graham is fighting for that extra $5 million. That case is supposed to come to an agreement, or come to a decision, I'll say, this coming week, so we'll have to keep an eye on what is decided. But my statement, Jimmy Graham should get paid wide receiver money, I'm punting that away. Look, there are tight ends through the history of the game. This isn't, yes, the tight end position is going through a revolutionary period right now. What tight ends are doing, they've never done before in the NFL. In the last 4 or 5 years, the position has completely changed. You can no longer just have a big guy blocking at the tight end position as an extra tackle. Yeah, I mean, that is still important. I still like having a blocking tight end. But you certainly have to have a tight end that can catch some passes and be an explosive big target in the red zone, like Jimmy Graham, Vernon Davis, Rob Gronkowski, Julius Thomas. I mean, those are the big four names that come to mind. And Davis and Thomas are really watching this decision, what comes of it, because they are due for a new contract as well. They would really like to receive wide receiver money, maybe an extra $5 million if they get franchise tagged, or at least go into negotiations saying, hey, I want to be considered a wide receiver. I want wide receiver money, not tight end money. So this is a big decision, not just for Jimmy Graham, but for all tight ends that I just named and all tight ends in general. But regardless of that, yes, the tight end position is going through a new phase and doing things it's never done before, but tight ends have lined up as wide receivers since the 70s. That is not new. They are lining up as wide receivers a lot more often. And yes, Jimmy Graham lined up as a wide receiver 67% of the time last year. That's according to USA Today. But that means he lined up as a tight end 37% of the time. How many times did Jerry Rice line up as a tight end? What was the percentage last year that Demaryius Thomas or Brandon Marshall lined up as a tight end? It was zero. I'm pretty sure, I don't have to do any research on it, it was zero. So maybe this is a silly argument to some people, but Jimmy Graham still lines up as a tight end almost 40% of the time. Or not, maybe not close to 40 because it's 67. Over 30% of the time, a third of the time. Of course, that's not a majority. It's not even close to a majority. I mean, he lined up twice as much as a wide receiver, but he's still lined up as a tight end. Wide receivers never line up as a tight end. If you line up as a tight end at all and you're listed as a tight end on the depth chart and it's on your Twitter, I say that as a joke. If you line up as a tight end at all and you're a tight end on the depth chart, you're a tight end. That's that. You shouldn't be paid wide receiver money. Next on our fourth and long segment list, we go to Cooper Allen's slideshow project that he's doing through the offseason. NFL Top 100 Players of 2014. He released players 60 through 41 a week and a half ago now, and players 40 through 21 will be coming out this Thursday. But let's review a little bit of what he had in 60 through 41. We just finished talking about wide receivers and whether Graham should be paid wide receiver money. Cooper listed quite a few wide receivers in that group of 20 players, 60 through 41, and I don't want to say who is listed at what spot specifically because I want to encourage everybody to go check out the article. But Cooper had Antonio Brown and Jordy Nelson, I will say, significantly higher, 10 spots or more higher than Brandon Marshall. Now, Cooper, I love you, man. I love you, man. That's a pretty good movie. You are a great writer, and you have some great stuff to say, and I am really enjoying the Top 100 Players of 2014 series. I got to disagree with you on this one. Marshall has been off the charts. He is a guy that I truly believe has been underrated so far, and not to take anything away from Antonio Brown or Jordy Nelson. Those guys have been excellent in the NFL. Nelson, say what you want about him playing with Aaron Rodgers, but he has been a solid wide receiver for them, more than solid wide receiver, the most consistent receiver that the Packers have had really since, since their Super Bowl year in 2010. Donald Driver has retired since then, and Greg Jennings left to free agency. So it really has fallen to Jordy Nelson, and he is that top guy in that receiver core. Randall Cobb has really come into his own, but I still would give the nod to Nelson. Brown obviously stepped up huge in the absence of Mike Wallace last season, became that number one guy for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger. But Brandon Marshall, since being traded in the 2012 offseason, he's caught 218 passes for over 2,800 yards, 23 touchdowns. And he's had at least 100 receptions in 5 of his 8 professional seasons. And his 950 receiving yards away from 10,000 in his career. I don't know if it's because he plays for the Bears
and Chicago isn't known for an aerial attack franchise, but Marshall is not mentioned with A.J. Green or Demaryius Thomas, those Dez Bryant, Larry Fitzgerald, those big-name wide receivers that he should be in. He is a top five wide receiver in the league, in my opinion. So at number 50, I'll reveal that. Nothing else. Marshall came in at number 50 overall on Cooper's list. I think he should be significantly higher. I think I would probably rank him higher than 41, not even put him in this segment. But obviously, you know, everybody has a different opinion. And Cooper, I respect your opinion. Just personally, I believe Marshall should be a little bit higher up on that list. Finally, we'll conclude this segment with some quarterback talk now. We mentioned Ben Roethlisberger, who throws to Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. Rod Woodson and Warren Sapp, two NFL Network analysts, who, by the way, are both in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, came out this week and said Ben Roethlisberger, as of right now, is not a Hall of Fame quarterback. Even though he's won two Super Bowls and appeared in a third, they do not believe that the Steelers QB is Hall of Fame worthy. Now, I mentioned the two Super Bowls, him winning the two Super Bowls. Not that many quarterbacks have been able to do that. In fact, there are 11 quarterbacks in NFL history in the Super Bowl era that have won two or more Super Bowls. Let's run down the list. Tom Brady, active player, future Hall of Famer. John Elway, Hall of Famer. Terry Bradshaw, Hall of Famer. Joe Montana, Hall of Famer. Roger Staubach, Hall of Famer. Troy Aikman, Hall of Famer. Bob Greasy, Hall of Famer. Bart Starr, Hall of Famer. Jim Plunkett, not Hall of Famer. Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger are the other two that are obviously still active. So we have, of the retired guys, all of them in the Hall of Fame but Jim Plunkett, and then the three active players are Tom Brady, Eli Manning, and Ben Roethlisberger. And Woodson and Sapp went on to say that they think Roethlisberger would be like a Jim Plunkett and not make it into the Hall of Fame, even though he has the two rings. Well, that list, I think, proves, maybe doesn't prove, but it should state that two Super Bowls in general, I mean, what, 90% of the time, 80% of the time, I should say 80% of the quarterbacks that have won two Super Bowls are in the Hall of Fame. Now, they did say that they don't think Eli Manning or Philip Rivers are deserving of the Hall of Fame either. So I would have a bigger problem with this statement if they said Roethlisberger didn't deserve the Hall of Fame and Eli Manning did. Not that I think Manning necessarily doesn't deserve it over or Big Ben. And actually, to close this segment, I'm going to compare the two, which I think it's really an interesting argument, and I haven't even gotten to my statement yet. I guess my statement should be a Ben Roethlisberger, and let's throw in Eli Manning too. Let's do them both. Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger, as of right now, are not future Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And you know what? It's really tough to debate. Maybe I shouldn't have included Eli, because I would say Eli is a no, and Ben, I would lean towards a yes. And this is why. I know Eli went on some great runs to win his two Super Bowls, and you could really credit him with the Super Bowl victories for the Giants, and you could say that Big Ben played with maybe more talented teams than Eli Manning did. That's up for debate. Those Pittsburgh teams were good. The Giants teams were good too, but you know, regular season finishing 9-7, 10-6. I mean, in 2007, they were 9-7, and they didn't win their division. They had to win the wild card. Of course, the Steelers were a wild card team in 05 when they won, but they had a record of 11-5. So some similarities, some differences. I would say, though, that Manning did a maybe not a better job, but certainly carried the Giants more than Ben carried the Steelers, in my opinion. That would argue that Manning is better. But if you take a look at their regular season statistics, now statistics don't mean everything to me, but you look at their overall record in the regular season, Ben is 95-47. Manning is 85-66. So Roethlisberger significantly better, has 10 more wins and a significantly better win percentage. The yards is very similar. Actually, Manning has the slight nod, 1,000 more yards at 35,300. Big Ben has 34,000. Manning has the edge in touchdowns, 229 to Big Ben's 219. Of course, Manning does have 10 extra games played, so take that into account. And Manning has thrown 50 more interceptions in his career than Big Ben. And actually, Manning has led the league in interceptions in three different seasons, including the season that he won the Super Bowl in 2007. He led the league with 20 picks. So Manning, it really is, Eli Manning, that is really a very funny guy to talk about Hall of Fame with, and funny as in just a quagmire, really, because he's been such a great postseason performer, won two Super Bowl MVPs. I mean, Big Ben doesn't even have one Super Bowl MVP, so certainly Manning has the edge on Ben in the big games, but just because you played well in a couple of big games doesn't put you in the Hall of Fame. Phil Sims isn't in the Hall of Fame. He arguably had the best game in the biggest game of his career. The best game he ever played was in Super Bowl 21 when he completed like 25 of 28 and two of the incomplete passes were drops and had two or three touchdowns. I mean, he was sensational and won the MVP, but that didn't put him in the Hall of Fame. And I feel that way about Eli Manning. Of course, this is fun to debate, but these two quarterbacks have still a ways to go. Even though they've been in the league for a long time now, 10 years, they still have 5, 6, maybe even longer time left in the NFL to prove that they are Hall of Fame worthy. But if I had to decide right now, again, I would lean Big Ben yes and disagree with Warren Sapp and Rob Woodson. And Eli Manning, I would lean no. One more break coming at you. Phil Sims. I've got Phil Sims on my mind. Phil Collins coming at you again with another song. We'll be back right after this to wrap up the show. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. One more time, here's my Twitter, DMHOLCOMB. You can send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. That's all we have for today's show. We will be back again in 2 weeks on July 7th. So, man, it's already the end of June, beginning of July. I mean, the first day of summer was 2 days ago, so the days are already getting shorter. That's depressing to think about, but enjoy the first week of July. We'll be back, I guess it will be officially the second week of July. And all of our listeners out there, have a great 4th. 4th of July falling on a Friday this year, so I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, sometimes when it fell on a Thursday, you had the long weekend, or even on a Wednesday, 2 years ago, it fell on a Wednesday, you just kind of had, a 5-day weekend or something like that. That was fun. But this year, at least take the 3-day weekend, maybe sneak in a 4th day on Thursday and have a great one, and have a trip to the beach or something, enjoy the weekend, and come back on Football Nation Well, of course, check out all the articles that pop up in between now and then, but come back and listen to the next episode of Monday Morning Huddle, July 7th. So until then, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.